Amen. Maybe you'd like to find a Bible. Luke chapter 7, and we're spending a day with Jesus. Remember that? We're wandering around, seeing what Jesus does. And as we see him, and as we see how he behaves, we're being changed as we see God in a new light maybe again. Or maybe remembering how we saw him first time around. So we're just spending a few days with Jesus in his ministry. And in Luke chapter 7 and verse 36, you come across a dinner party. Let me read it to you. Luke chapter 7, verse 36. One of the Pharisees asked Jesus to have dinner with him, which was unusual. So Jesus went to his home and sat down to eat. And when a certain immoral woman from that city heard he was eating there, she brought a beautiful alabaster jar filled with expensive perfume. And she knelt behind him at his feet, weeping. Her tears fell on his feet and she wiped them off with her hair. She kept kissing his feet and putting perfume on them. And when the Pharisees who'd invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know what kind of woman is touching him. She's a sinner. Jesus answered his thoughts. Simon, he said to the Pharisee, I have something to say to you. Go ahead, teacher, Simon replied. And Jesus told him this story. A man loaned money to two people, 500 pieces of silver to one and 50 pieces to the other. But neither of them could repay him, so he kindly forgave them both, cancelling their debts. Now, who do you suppose loved him more after that? Simon answered, well, I suppose the one for whom he cancelled the larger debt. That's right, Jesus said. Then he turned to the woman and said to Simon, look at this woman kneeling here. When I entered your home, you didn't offer me water to wash the dust from my feet, but she has washed them with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You didn't greet me with a kiss, but from the time I first came in, she has not stopped kissing my feet. You neglected the courtesy of olive oil to anoint my head, but she has anointed my feet with rare perfume. I tell you, her sins, and they are many, have been forgiven. So she has shown me much love. But a person who is forgiven little shows only a little love. And Jesus said to the woman, your sins are forgiven. The men at the table said amongst themselves, who is this man that he goes around forgiving sins? And Jesus said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. It's a great story, an amazing graphic sort of story. And I wonder how you'd feel if you were sat in that dinner party and something like, you ever been in a dinner party where something embarrassing happened? Where something, ooh, hang on, that's a little personal or that's a little bit crossing a line. And that, can you imagine sitting there when this woman comes in weeping and wiping his feet with her hair? And, wow, amazing, isn't it? This was a dinner party. Now, I want you to imagine that dinner party. And when I think of dinner, I always think of the smell of food and stuff. So I wondered what you feel about smells and things like that. You know, there are a lot of smells in the world. I'm going to put some on the screen, and I want you to vote with an ugh if you don't like it, or a if you do. All right? So we're going to try this out. Let's see what you get. Here we go. Here's the first one. Coffee. You lot, you got your caffeine fix. There's one under there, yeah. Yeah, it's a good one. There's a glass under there. You can bring coffee in here, you know, it's all right. No. Okay, so coffee, what about this one? Petrol. So I quite like the smell of petrol. That's a real good... Ooh, diesel, not so keen. Petrol, quite like it. All right, so that's an ear. What about this one? Marker pen. Some of you have a marker pen problem, don't you? Yeah. Over there, I heard it. Oh, yes. Yeah, marker pen. There's nothing like a brand new marker pen. Take the, you know, a Sharpie or something and take the thing off and have a whiff. Oh, amazing. You'll be smiling all day. There you go. Okay. There's that one. What else? Cut grass. How about that? Oh, there you go. You're going to have to wait a few months for that one again, but it will be coming back. It's very popular. Okay, here's another one. What about that? Bacon. You lot, calm down. Okay. I know, it's terrible, isn't it? It doesn't matter if you've just had a massive meal, you can still eat bacon, can't you? When it's frying away, well, I can anyway. So it's great fun. And the event taking place in our story today as we follow Jesus around is in a metaphorical 24 hours. It's a dinner party, so there'll be all sorts of smells going around. The aroma of meat roasting over a fire, the aroma of garlic and peppers and maybe onions, and now I'm getting hungry because I didn't have any bread. Obviously, it was no quiche. It wasn't a Baptist do, so there was no quiche whatsoever in the building. The Pharisees weren't keen on quiche. It was dinner, proper dinner. And Jesus has gotten invited, which is really weird because we said last week the people that went to Jesus were the people that were completely different from him. There were people who were desperate and sinners and outcasts and edge of society people, and all the respectable people avoided Jesus like the plague. So this is weird because the respectable people are now inviting Jesus to dinner. It's the first time we read about this. And he goes along. Verse 36. One of the Pharisees asked Jesus to have dinner with him. So Jesus went to his home and he sat down to eat. Jesus wasn't going to judge anybody. He was saying, okay, you want to have dinner? You want to get close to me? Let's find out what you really want. And this time, it was one of those religious leaders, and his name was Simon. This is his CV, so profile. His name is Simon, not to be confused with Simon Peter, or Simon the Zealot, or Simon the Leper, or even Simon Cowell. This was Simon the Pharisee, okay? It's different Simon. Okay, occupation, teacher of religious law, high on the pecking order, in Israel, very respected person. Religious sect, he was a member of the Pharisees who went by various aliases that Jesus gave them, aliases like whitewashed tombs, hypocrites, blind guides, brood of vipers. As you can see, not Jesus' favorite people in the world, but that's what he called them. Character, the character of this guy, curious, reflective, slightly cynical, very pious, pretty prejudiced, a little bit arrogant, and just a little bit superior, not blessed also with the gift of hospitality. Now, there are lots of other invited guests at this party on that night. Pharisees are there, but there's some uninvited guests who walk in. And the scene and the aroma in that place is about to change massively because of this. It's about to take on the sweet, sweet aroma of forgiveness and gratitude. That's going to be the aroma that suddenly gets into that room. Verse 37, when a certain immoral woman from that city heard he was eating there, she brought a beautiful alabaster jar filled with expensive perfume. She knelt behind him. Remember, you didn't sit on a chair. You sat on the floor on a cushion. And often your feet, you're wondering why she knelt behind him. And how did that happen? Because he was sat on the floor and his feet were behind him. She would have been behind him and his feet would have been behind him. She sat on the floor behind him, weeping. Her tears fell on his feet and she wiped them off with her hair. Then she kept kissing his feet and putting perfume on them. That phrase, immoral woman, by the way, it meant habitually immoral. The term means habitually, a lifestyle that revolves around sin. She was, in all probability, we believe, a prostitute. Now, banquets in those days were very public affairs where people were allowed to sit on the side and hang around on the... It doesn't happen when you have a dinner, do you? You just get the people, technically, you invited. In those days, they would sit on the patio outside and on the wall and outside the window looking in, because this was a public thing. This is how you had these meals in those days. So the town turns up and looks in, literally, on the meal. So this woman took this opportunity because it was the cultural thing to do. It still happens in some places. Well, I went to a wedding in Bulgaria once, and the whole wedding party was there and all the family, and it was huge. But the whole village was on the periphery as well, watching and being part of this wedding. They weren't the invited guests, but they were invited to come and watch. So that's what's going on. Now, it'd be an understatement to say she was not welcome at this dinner. Not by the host, Simon, the Pharisee and religious teacher of the law. She wasn't welcome in this town, let alone in this dinner party. Most of the towns in Jesus' day were small communities, so we all know that small town gossip is twice as efficient as fiber optic broadband, isn't it? It really is fast. It works really well. So you know how much courage it probably took this woman to turn up, let alone to do what she's just about to do in approaching Jesus in such a graphic and visual way. And she brought with her an alabaster jar, it says. That's that wonderful sort of translucent stone that you can get. And we believe it was probably a tool of her trade as a prostitute. This wonderful smelling perfume that she used as part of her line of work. However, it appears that it's no longer being used for that line of work for this woman. Somewhere along the way, we think she met Jesus. She must have met Jesus before this point to respond like she's just doing. She's had an encounter with Jesus, we don't know. He touched her, he'd noticed her, but he'd done it in a way that no other man had ever touched her or noticed her. She'd had this powerful encounter with grace and with compassion and forgiveness. And some scholars, they think this woman might be referring to Mary Magdalene, who you remember was demon-possessed. She was completely controlled by spiritual forces, and Jesus set her free from that. But we don't actually know. We don't know if this is Mary Magdalene or not. What we do know is her true identity is now changed. She is now a forgiven daughter of her heavenly Father. And now she walks into this house uninvited, and she just explodes with gratitude because she's met Jesus, and he's changed her life. I wonder if you've ever had that experience of just coming undone. You know what I mean? You just sort of break down. You just get a bit uncontrollable, and you're trying to be British and polite, and it just doesn't work. And you start sobbing, or you're a wreck. Have you ever cried in public? You ever done that? And you're trying to fight it back, but it just won't stop. Well, that's what happens for this woman. And she comes unglued, but the thing about this woman is she's not that worried. Who knows? Unlike you and I, who are British, if we came undone in public, we go, oh, sorry about that, sorry about that. She doesn't care. She doesn't care. You know what? Probably that woman has spent her life learning not to care what people think about her. She's had to do that. So she doesn't care about breaking down in front of them all. Before she can even open that little jar, she starts to cry. And the Greek word for weeping here is the same word as, it's beautiful, it's the word rain. Rain. She falls on the floor at Jesus' feet. She falls on the floor at Jesus' feet. She caresses his feet in her hands. Her tears are raining, literally raining down on his unwashed feet, leaving wet spots in the dust. And she lets her hair down. That's something you don't do in civilized Jewish society in the first century. That's a sign of, you know, moral weakness. But she lets her hair down. And she begins to dry his feet with her hair, and she starts to kiss his feet. And the word kiss here is to kiss profusely. That's what she's doing. And she breaks open her perfume, she pours it on Jesus' feet, and the word here, again, it just gives you the feel for what's going on. The word actually means rub or massage into his feet. It's very graphic, very full on, her response to Jesus. So that's the scene, and she's become completely undone in public. And the smell of perfume, but I would want to say the smell of humility and of forgiveness and grace just fills that room. You may remember from last week, I know it's how approachable Jesus is. You remember last week we were talking about that, and that we need to be like that. We need to be approachable. Because Jesus doesn't say, in the midst of this, what could have been, for some of us, British sensitivities, embarrassing. He doesn't say, get up, you're making a fool of yourself. He doesn't say, you'll have to excuse this woman, she's a stalker. He doesn't say any of that. He doesn't say, you can't control the fans, can you, boys? Sorry about that. He doesn't make light of it to break the tension. He doesn't ask for security to get rid of her and bounce her out of the place. He doesn't do any of that stuff. He just lets her do it. He just lets her do it in the middle. I wonder what you would do if somebody did that to you. You'd be, oh, whoa, hang on, whoa, hey. He probably hadn't. That's something I never thought about, Jesus. No ticklish feet. There you go. Yeah, you learn something new every day, Doug. Yeah, he hasn't got ticklish feet. But I mean, you know, we'd all be going, whoa, hang on. And Jesus just goes, go for it. Amazing. And it wasn't some sort of grandiose thing with Jesus, was it? Because some of us, you know, we love it when people go, oh, you're far marvelous, you're wonderful, let me, and public expressions of affection or gratitude. He wasn't basking in the adoration of a fan. He was basking in the aroma of a changed life. That's why he was letting it happen, because it was change in her life, and he just wanted to see it. He just loved it. That's why he let it happen. He was soaking up the smell of surrender. He was enjoying the fragrance of forgiveness. I read about a church in the Dominican Republic who, before their worship service, they go out. Oh, it's a bit like Jesus' parable. You remember Jesus' parable of the banquet, the wedding feast? And they send the invites out and nobody comes. So they send out, they say, right, go out and fill the room. I don't care who you get. And they go out into the street. And this church in the Dominican Republic goes out and it finds the beggars and the homeless and the people on the streets, anybody it can find, it brings them in and it feeds them, and then they worship together. It's like Jesus' parable every single week. That church is packed every week with the homeless and the street people. And as you can imagine, it probably doesn't smell particularly good in that church. It probably doesn't smell great. It probably smells awful in that room. But you know what? God is smelling that room in the Dominican Republic, and he is going, ah, that smells good. Because he said, I didn't come to heal the well, I came to heal the sick. I didn't come for the found, I came for the lost. And when God smells a room full of people like that, he goes, ah, that's good. He doesn't go, ugh. He goes, ah. Now, among all these wonderful smells filling that room was the familiar stench of judgmentalism wafting through the air, as you can tell as you read this story. Watching from the table is our friend Simon, the Pharisee, the host of the dinner. And he is appalled at what is going on. Look at verse 39. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know what kind of woman he's touching. She's a sinner. Now, the word for what kind of woman actually comes from the Greek word for soil. Let me say what he's actually saying. This woman is dirt. That's the word he uses, soil. This woman is dirt. That's how he sees her. And look at his thought process. Here's what he says. If Jesus lets her touch him, then he obviously hasn't a clue who she is. And if he hasn't a clue who she is, then he can't be the prophet everybody says he is. That's his logic. That's the way he's working. Verse 40, Jesus answers his thoughts. He says, Simon, I love this, Jesus knows what he's thinking. Simon, he said, I have something to say to you. Go ahead, teacher, Simon replies. Then Jesus tells him a story. A man loaned money to two people, 500 pieces of silver to one and 50 pieces to the other. I used to work in a bank, so I love this sort of stuff. So here we go. Here's what we're talking about. A piece of silver in those days that Jesus refers to was a denarius, and a denarius was one day's average work. That was what you would get paid for an average day's work. So, taking that in modern terms, one of those silver coins, minimum wage is $7.38 an hour if you're over 20-something. If you're 16, tough. If you're over 20-something, it's $7.38 an hour. $7.38 by 8 hours is £59.04. He had 500 of those. He owed 500 of those, 500 silver denarii. That's 29,520 quid. One man owes this guy 29 grand. 30 grand, let's round it up for, you know, just to be generous. Here's the other guy. If he's got 50 pieces, which is a day's work, £59 is roughly a day's work in modern terms, he owes him 2,952. That's the difference. One owes 30 grand, the other one owes 3. Jesus says in verse 42, neither of them could repay. So he kindly forgave them both, cancelling their debts. You can see the difference in the debt there. So here's the £29,000 question, Simon. Who do you suppose loved him more after that? Doesn't take a genius, does it? Doesn't take a leader in religious law, to be honest, to answer that one. Simon's thinking, I don't know where he's going with this, but okay, here we go. Well, I suppose it's the one whom he cancelled the larger debt for. That's right, Jesus says. You see, Simon had already been doing a lot of judging that night. Jesus is looking tenderly at this woman. Now, you notice that in the text. He's looking at the woman, but he's talking to Simon. He hasn't forgotten her. She hasn't become just an academic exercise. He still cares about her. He's looking at the woman. He's talking to Simon. Do you see this woman do you see this woman for who she really is? He says. Because Simon, to be honest, you don't see me for who I am. I came into your house and you didn't give me water for my feet. It's a common courtesy for all guests in our world. And you didn't do it for me, Simon. Jesus says, you let me eat with dirty feet. You don't do that. Nobody does that. But she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You didn't give me a kiss when I arrived, Simon. That's a customary greeting in that culture. It is a kiss. But this woman, from the time I entered, has not stopped kissing my feet. You didn't put oil on my head, which is a customary thing, even the cheap olive oil that's given for refreshment before a meal. Standard thing you do at one of these events. You didn't even do that for me, Simon. But she's poured perfume on my feet. And look at verse 47. Here's his point. Tell you her sins, and they are many, have been forgiven. So she has shown me much love. But a person who's forgiven little shows only a little love. I want you to note something about that. Number one, her love for Jesus doesn't save her. His love for her saves her. I want you to notice that. This woman is just pouring herself out in response to what God has already done for her, for what Jesus has already done for her. She's pouring herself out. The act doesn't save her. Jesus' act towards her saves her. His attitude towards her. And notice something else about that. Jesus doesn't gloss over her sin, does he? He doesn't say it didn't matter or it wasn't important. God is serious about sin. It's what separates me and you from him. He hates what it does to us. He hates what it's done to our relationship with him. He hates what it's done to our relationship with our friends. What it does to our families. What it does to our marriages or to our children. He hates what sin does. Sin, the wages of sin is death. Something always dies when there's sin around. Something always dies. But in this instance, he doesn't condone sin. He never downplays it. But in this instance, he says to Simon, I tell you, she's got many sins. She's got various sins. She's got a bucket load of sins, this woman, and we all know it. This is a small town. But they've been forgiven. They've been cancelled. And that's why she is like she is right now, Simon. And Simon, it's why you are like you are right now. She knows she's been forgiven much. You don't think you have anything to be forgiven for. You see, Simon knew all the religion, he knew all the liturgy, all the rules, all the rituals, all the regulations, but somehow he'd missed the very heart of the law of God. Out of all the commands that Simon had kept religiously in all of his life, he had missed the most important one. And this woman had nailed it. Because the first and greatest command is this: love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your mind and with all your soul and with all your strength. And she was doing that right then. And she wasn't holding back. I love what Beth Moore writes about this. She said, anything that holds us back from pouring our lives and hearts out upon Jesus is a bond. It may look like angry ropes or it may look like a pretty ribbon, but if it keeps us from the one who frees us, then it is a bond all the same. I wonder if there are things stopping us pouring ourselves out at the feet of Jesus, obeying the first and greatest command to love God with everything that we have. I wonder if we are getting stuck on that. The truth is, however, you can go, a bit like Simon, you can go to church for years and never be free. You can do the religious stuff and never know God. And that's what Simon was like. So I'm going to ask you, here's the question. How's your love for God these days? How's your love for God these days? Because that's the heart of why we even gather here today. Not because we're supposed to, not because we ought to, but because we love him. And we want to meet with him together. We want to meet with him. That's why we do this. How's your love for God? Are you loving him with all your heart, your mind, and your soul, your strength? Are you loving him? Honestly, do you find your love more like Simon's or more like this woman's? Honestly. You know, I have to ask myself that question all the time, because it's the heart of everything that I do will flow out of that. Do I still find God's amazing grace still amazing? Or do I find it interesting? That's the difference between that woman and Simon. He found it interesting. She found it amazing. How's your love for God these days? And how's your love for other people? Because if you read your Bible, you'll discover anybody who says, I love God, but doesn't love other people, is lying. You can't. You can't love other people without loving God. Not in the way that God means love. Are you less loving or more loving these days towards other people? Are you more compassionate and less judgmental? Are you finding you are less judgmental about people this week than last week, this year than last year? Jesus said that those who have been forgiven much love much. The degree to which we have been forgiven affects the way we treat other people. It always will and always does. The degree to which we understand how much we've been forgiven. It's not about what you've done or whether you've got the sort of history that people stand up and give a testimony about and you think, wow, I'm amazed you're still alive. It's not about that. Because some people's testimony always makes mine feel a bit pathetic. It really does. I stand there, well, I grew up and I was quite good and I went to school and then I met Jesus. That's not good. Maybe I should have, you know, taking drugs in between. Or, you know, it would be far more dramatic. It's not about that. It's just an understanding that you've been forgiven. It doesn't matter what for, it's just you've been forgiven. And that where sins aren't any bigger, are they? In God's economy, it doesn't matter how big the sin was. Sin is sin, full stop. It still kills you. It still kills your relationship. Degree to which we have been forgiven affects the way we treat other people. Proud, self-righteous people who think they don't need to be forgiven, who think they're always right, have trouble forgiving other people. That's the truth. And it doesn't matter if I'm 80 or I'm 13, if I'm 45 or if I'm 27. If that describes me, I am going to be a tough person to live with. And if you ever learn how to love and forgive and live free, then you're going to have to humble yourself and let God first forgive you. C.S. Lewis said this, prostitutes are in no danger of finding their present life so satisfactory that they cannot turn to God. But the proud, the arrogant, the self-righteous, they are in precisely that danger. And when you know that you need grace, you extend grace. Simon had no capacity to love because he had no sense of his need to be forgiven. Direct connection. How's your love for others these days? Jesus is still looking at this woman and he speaks directly to her and he says, your sins are forgiven. She knew that and she felt it and she needed it and she acknowledged it. Simon didn't. And that sets up even more grumbling because they all look at Jesus and say, who on earth do you think you are forgiving sins? Well, we know who he was. He's God. They had God right in their midst. And the first commandment is to love him with all your heart, your soul, and your strength. And this woman was doing it, and nobody else was. Nobody else did. Ignoring all the rumblings around her, Jesus focused on this woman, and he says to this woman, your faith has saved you, go in peace. The word peace means wholeness, the shalom, shalom of God. Go in the wholeness that only God can give to each one of us. Walk in the knowledge that you are completely accepted and forgiven by God. I hope you do that every day, Christian. I hope you do that. I do that. Completely accepted and forgiven. No need to perform. No need to pretend. No need to earn his approval. You are completely forgiven and accepted. Walk in the peace of that. And she did. I'm sure she did. From that moment on. This may not seem a relevant illustration, but I'll give it to you anyway, because this is important. Years ago, because I'm a bloke, I wanted a flat screen TV. I wanted a flat screen TV because everybody else was getting flat screen TVs. And we had this thing in the corner of our room that my dad had given to me that probably fell off the back of a lorry, if I'm honest. And it was about the size of a shed, because they were in those days. It was a cathode ray job, so it had this huge rear end. It took up half the room. It was a great big TV, but it was took up massive. And I really was hoping for a flat screen at some point. And then the day came when smoke drifted out the back of this thing, and I rejoiced greatly in the occurrence, because it meant I could get rid of it legitimately and we could buy a flat screen TV. And I phoned up, I did do the proper thing and phoned up an engineer and said, can you come and fix it? And he said, what make is it? And I told him and he laughed. And he said, I'm not even coming out, mate. You need to throw that in a skip. So that's what we did. So we lobbed it in a skip and we went out and we bought this flat screen TV. And of course, all the flat screens, when they started coming out, were all in HD. Have you ever gone from bog standard to HD? It's an amazing transition. It's a weird thing to suddenly go HD in your life. I was watching, the detail was incredible. I couldn't go back to watching ordinary TV anymore because it looked so bad compared to HD. Now you've got UHD, Ultra HD, 4K. They're going to bring out 8K next. It's going to be like being there, isn't it? But there you go. But you know what I find? When your life gets revealed in high definition, when you go from just seeing the grainy picture to seeing it in such clarity, when you see it clearly, your life, for what it was, and you can see God clearly for who he is in ultra HD, and when you can see how much better your life with him is than it would have potentially been without him, it's really hard to go back, isn't it? It's hard to go back. The beauty of loving God is it makes you want to pursue a different life, and you can't go back to the old definitions, the old images, the old ways. It's hard to go back when you've experienced something so much better. You want to live a different life. But here's the trick. You have to see it with clarity. How much you've been forgiven, who he is, and the alternative if you never met him. You have to see that with such clarity that you will never go back and your life will take a different turn. The common thread that we've been weaving through all these encounters with Jesus, and I'll stop with this, is that it's been the humility of the people who just responded and received his grace. Have you noticed that? Time and time again, there's this immense humility of these people. Peter, we talked about, didn't we? And he fell to his knees in front of Jesus. A leper, we talked about last week, and he falls face down in the dirt. A woman, kneeling behind her, washing his feet with her hair and drying them. Amazing. And Isaiah 66 says this. This is what you want to hold on to. This is what God says about those sort of people who fall on their knees in front of Jesus because they see him with such clarity. This is what it says. These are the ones I look on with favor, says God. These are the ones that I esteem. Prostitutes and fishermen and lepers and outcasts. These are the ones that I'm impressed by, says God. These who are humble and contrite in spirit and who tremble at my word. Isaiah 66, verse 2. Friends, the only thing that needs to take, that you need to take your life in a different direction and to get it back on track and to give you fresh hope and to give you a new start is the humility to see with fresh eyes who you are and who God is. That's all you need. And by the power of his Spirit, he will show you. And you will never go back when you see that with clarity. That woman didn't. But Simon didn't get it. Which are we? Which are we? We're going to close with a song. And the song, just last week we sang Amazing Grace, because I think that would have been that leper's theme tune. He could have written it. It would have been his song. And I wondered what this woman's song would be. What would her song be if she could write it? And I think this is probably pretty close. And maybe you'd like to step into her shoes for a moment and sing this from your perspective, from your gratitude, from seeing him in HD once again.
Phil, actually, at Christmas, I was shopping for Joe, and I bought her this, I was buying this fantastic mirror that's multi-magnified with daylight thing
it's
that
amazing.
Comes around the edge. It's an amazing mirror.
Right.
But when I was buying it, the lady in the shop, she said, I said, is it good? And she said, I'll warn you, she said, you might get depressed because it makes you can actually see what you really look like. she said, it's great if you can get over that.
It is,
I tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, just seeing yourself in clarity and then seeing God for who he is.
I won't look in it.
He's sleeping in the shed now. There you go. No, it's cool. Yeah, that's right. But seeing clarity makes such a difference, doesn't it? Seeing ourselves for who we are and then realizing how much God has forgiven us, that will change your life. It already has. Let's sing this lady's song.